Hello and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McRoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
Well, before we get started, I just want to say thank you to everybody who participated in the Max Fun Drive last week.
Yes.
Thank you so much. We appreciate everybody who donated and joined our community. I just want to start off with that.
Yeah. Thank you all.
We're always so
thank
appreciative.
You very much.
It was so much fun to do some different things and, you know, to get all of our members involved. It was really exciting.
Burst into song.
Yeah.
I look for excuses to write parody songs, so.
I think if we let you, you would just write one every week, right?
Mm-hmm. That
to
would
burst
be the
into
show.
Song about whatever the current. Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be the show.
No, this is absolutely true. I was getting Charlie in the car before school the other morning, and as I was loading her up, I don't even remember what I was singing, but it was to the tune of the cartoon that she was just watching, the theme song, except I was making up words about going to school to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got one line in and she stopped me and she said, I know what you're about to do. You're going to keep singing this song, but you're going to sing it with the wrong words. And I just want you to know that I don't want you to. And I said, what? And she said, I know what you're going to do and I'm just not feeling it, Mom.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. No parody today? No, Mom. I don't like it when you do that.
You got a critic.
I know.
Kids can be mean.
The girls really don't like parody. They don't like...
They really don't like when you get the words wrong to songs.
Yes.
You really hate that. They will yell.
Yes.
Even when it's not intentional, like when I'm just singing along to one of their songs with them and I just get one of the words mixed up. It's like we all have to stop. No. That's not right.
Is this like... I mean, because kids, you know, always rebel against their parents by kind of being the opposite of whatever their parents are. So this is what you guys break out into? Like, your kids are super against parody songs and jokes.
If they rebel against podcasting, we'll know.
Right?
We'll know that's what... They already communicate mostly in YouTube form. Like, not with actual video, but... Like, Cooper and I were making slime together, and it was just, I mean, we weren't videoing it. It was just Cooper and I making slime together. And as we start to do it, she goes, okay, guys, Mommy's going to add the glue first. Mommy, say hi. And I'm looking around like, who are we talking to? Like, I'm like losing it for a second.
The YouTube.
Like, is this how children play pretend now?
They do. They start out all of our activities with, hey, guys.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Seriously, it was a very Truman Show moment where I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was the truth. They're watching us.
Kids, you just have tiny cameras.
They would. Charlie does. I have to be careful about that because sometimes Charlie is just filming us and we don't know it.
Yeah, or she's just like setting up her iPad and just like filming herself making various faces at the camera and mm-hmm. making noises and then adding an effect to it and bringing it over to show you like, look at this great video I made, Charlie. Come on. I've seen you put in much more effort into these videos before. This is not your best work.
So I'm really excited. This topic this week was inspired by a Mother's Day present I received.
Yes.
I don't know if I mentioned that last week. This is why I wanted to talk about it. Okay. Well, Cooper...
You can mention it again.
Cooper got me a handheld Carmen Sandiego game for Mother's Day, which was a strange gift.
It's a very strange gift.
Why does that exist?
Was that like one that maybe Justin picked out and was just like, here, Coop, this is from you?
Justin swore it was from her. And we're both pretty good about, like, within reason, letting the kids pick out their own presents for us. Within reason.
Sure.
I mean, like, Charlie got me, she got me, like, a box of bath products with, like, bath bombs and mm-hmm. some other things like that. And he said they literally were online looking through every different, like, box subscription, until she found one with, like, a logo she liked.
Yeah.
But... So within reason, like, he lets them do their own thing. But this was really, they were at the store and Cooper saw this and said, I want to get that for Mommy.
She has strange taste.
But it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. It is a little, like, it's a little handheld thing, but it is just the computer game.
Wow.
The original old school Carmen Sandiego computer game.
Wow.
So, which I know you have not played.
No.
Riley, what form of Carmen Sandiego have you interacted with in preparation?
I watched mostly the more recent Carmen Sandiego, because mm-hmm. That was very easily accessible. But I did watch a few snippets of the older Carmen Sandiego,
okay.
the OG cartoon. I found some clips on YouTube. But I read about the video games, because I guess there were many of them.
Yes.
Google told me there were like 22 video games. I couldn't play any of them, but I read about them.
I played the original computer game, and then I've played that more recently because of this handheld. Mm-hmm. Justin found an updated Carmen Sandiego computer game that we played last night from like 2011. Which, like, you would have to, by the way, I don't know if, Taylor, have you ever seen this game?
A recent one?
A more recent
game? No, I don't think I've seen, I think the only Carmen Sandiego game that I remember playing is the one that we had on that, I don't know, that computer we booted with DOS.
That was the original. I think this one was called like World or something. But anyway, it was a, in it, you are these two agents who are trying to find Carmen Sandiego. Obviously, that's the whole thing. And with Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, you're trying to find Carmen Sandiego.
Right.
She's like an international thief or whatever.
Well,
that
is like the question at the, in the title of the game.
And you use geography to find her. Uh-huh. And the power of geography. And in this iteration of the game, you are an agent named Julie, but she calls her Jules, and then I don't remember the guy's name, and the guy, Julie and the guy, and
okay. Julie and the guy.
It's set up that Carmen, when she used to be an agent before she turned, you know, rogue, she was Julie's partner, and like all these places you go, she's always like, I remember when Carmen and I rode the train here. I remember
when.
Are
they in love?
I am not saying that's intentional, but somebody, for me, it feels very Killing Eve. For me, it's like a very strong Killing Eve energy that I'm getting from this.
No, wait, it's a different character, because there is a Jules in the new cartoon who is one of the agents that works for Interpol,
really?
Who is a girl who's involved in tracking Carmen. They don't have a previous
that's
history together, as far as I know, but they have and somehow reintroduced that character.
Mm-hmm. In this one, Jules and Carmen were partners in the agency for a long time before
Partners in life.
Partners in love. Well, that is not said. That is not stated. But like,
I've accepted that as canon now.
As soon as she shows up, Carmen's like, hey, Jules, long time no see. And who's this rookie they got you paired with? Now, immediately throwing shade at like her new male partner.
The guy.
And it's just such a strong like, oh, I know what's happening here. So anyway, I ship Jules and Carmen pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also feel like if I had kept playing that game, there's a reason that Carmen turned. And it has to do with like some bad stuff going down at Acme. And it's not because she's really a thief. I don't know. That's just in my headcanon. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I mean, that's consistent in most of the, pretty much all the media, is that Carmen's never an outright villain. She's sometimes up to no good, but she's never evil. And a lot of times depending on the, you know, the incarnation, sometimes she's absolutely on the side of good.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think I ever realized, when I played the original one, I don't ever remember thinking there was any sort of like moral ambiguity to it. Like the idea is Carmen stole something. She's from the Villains International League of Evil, or Vile for short.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the Acme Detective Agency is who you are part of tracking her. And I thought it was very much like in the original computer game, she's bad, you're good, find her, find the loot, right? Find the loot, get the warrant, catch the crook.
Well, in the I guess this was probably in the 90s, the cartoon, which I had completely erased from my brain somehow. And then I watched a bunch of episodes yesterday. I was like, oh my gosh, I remember this. like, look, the new Carmen that has like a tragic backstory and like sympathetic, you know, like, I don't know, explanation to why she is the way she is. That's good. But like the Carmen in that cartoon. So like the few episodes I watched, like her goals were to talk to aliens in one episode, make a dinosaur, steal the dome of the Taj Mahal to house her dinosaur. She paint her face on the moon. I like steal a bunch of high-end cat supplies for her really fancy cats. Like the complete chaos, but like not evil, because you know in the cartoon there's the two detectives that are employed in chasing her. There's Ivy and her younger brother Zach, and Carmen is purposely giving them clues to find her. Because I guess she just wants to show off the great caper she's doing. And she saves them several times. Like, she'll rescue them from certain doom. And she gives them clues. And like, ha ha ha, I'm so glad you found me. Watch me paint my face on the moon. I love that. That's my favorite Carmen. Where it's like, she's just living her best life.
So Riley, so you know where this started. In the original computer game that came out in like 85.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh,
I'm trying to imagine the looks and quality and experience of a video game, computer game that existed in 1985.
For its time, it was considered a pretty big deal because of how many different colors it had in it. And because of the way that you interacted with it. So like what you would do is, so Carmen Sandiego has stolen something. And they would, you know, it could be like an artifact, or sometime it was like, I remember this from watching the game show, which we will have to talk about. But sometimes it would be like, Carmen Sandiego has stolen Colonial Williamsburg. <It's> like, what?
Yeah, she stole like whole deserts.
Now, how did she do that?
Yeah. She would steal like a desert or something. Like, but then other times it was like she stole literally the Declaration of Independence, which like Nick Cage, you know, he's
gonna
be all over
that. I
was going
to say, national treasure. What?
So like, she would steal something and then you would have to, but it wasn't Carmen at first. At first, it's one of the agents of Vile. Mm-hmm. And like the end of the game would be Carmen. So first you're like, okay, you interview witnesses by going to three different locations wherever you are. You go to like a marketplace and a museum or a, mm-hmm. you know, restaurant or whatever. And you interview witnesses and they will tell you something about the place that the henchman is going. And then something about them, because you have to do two things before you catch them. First, you have to go to the right place. So you got to follow the clues to know like, oh, the country, like that he was waving a blue and white flag. What country of the choices has a blue and white flag? Mm-hmm. Or he was going where the mountain range of whatever exists. And you have to know.
So you had to be kind of a nerd to be good at this game.
Well, you either
or have lots of like encyclopedias.
Precisely. Yeah. So a lot of what you would have to do is like the tablet was written in Sanskrit. What country is he going to? And so like what we would then do is run over to the Encyclopedia Britannica, pull out S for Sanskrit, look up Sanskrit, and then figure out what country we're going to.
This is the wildest series of events I've ever heard.
And this was true for all of, I remember looking
just
up all these
tell you
different
about libraries.
In the encyclopedias to like figure out, and then you would know like, okay, it looks like they're going to Greece or whatever next, and that's where we need to go. And but all the while you have to collect these clues, and there's a little sheet where you can like fill in on the menu, like is it male or female, what color hair does the person have, what are their activities. That was always great because it was like you're interviewing witnesses and the witness would be like, it was a guy, he had dark hair, and also he's really into skydiving. It's like, what? How do you know that?
Came up in conversation.
But you would have to fill in like the like I said, the hair color, the gender, the what activity they like, what their hobby is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you would get like an extra feature about them, like their jewelry or something like that. What kind of vehicle they were driving. Was it a motorcycle or a sports car or whatever? Mm-hmm. And then once you filled in enough of this, it would narrow down like your your directory of villains and tell you, like, okay, it sounds like it's this person. You've been issued a warrant for the arrest of this person. And so part of the game was you find the right country, you find the henchmen, the warrant has to match. So if you didn't follow the clues right, then they would get away.
Gotcha.
So this was the whole game. And you would do this over and over and over again, crisscrossing around the globe, collecting warrants and criminals until you find Carmen Sandiego.
Okay.
And you learn geography. Voila.
Amazing. Educational and entertaining.
And the great thing is they made that and it was super popular because, like, they sold it to schools and stuff, right? Like, schools were like, this is great. We got Oregon Trail. We got Carmen Sandiego. We don't ever have to teach children again.
No.
See, I didn't get any video games to teach me anything in school.
Really?
Yeah. Just, like, teachers.
What were you going to say, Tim?
Oh, no. Do you think that was, like, a moment of hope? Like, wait, can we just entirely educate children with video games? Why did they give up on that? They should have kept going with that.
Just there were too many video games then at that point when I was in elementary school that were obviously not for educational purposes, that they were like, we can't let these kids play video games during the day. All at home.
You learned to read in large part due to the fact that you wanted to read Animal Crossing.
That's true. That also helped Charlie learn to read. She also wanted to read Animal Crossing. That is very true. But all of the video games I remember playing in school were, like, I remember one that was also a reading test, but it disguised itself as a video game because you were in, like, a little woodland creatured area with different animals and you had to, like, explore it to read what these animals were saying. Oh. But it was just a book. It was just a book you had to read, but you just clicked around to read the different parts.
It was a trick.
Yeah. We didn't even get Oregon Trail.
Well, in Carmen Sandiego, I knew we were learning. It was so fun. It was such a good game. It was so satisfying that I didn't mind it. Like, I knew it was a trick. I knew they were teaching me geography.
I mean, you also were nerd. So you enjoyed learning.
I enjoyed the race of, like, having to the fact that you had to interact with your encyclopedia there while you were doing it, I found very exciting. Like, well, it was a precursor to when you would just look everything up on your phone, except, like, I have this giant multimodal
experience
of books that I have to search through to find the answer. I loved that. And so a lot of kids loved it. It was very popular, which is why it took them a while, but they finally turned it into a game show.
They did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was unaware.
So it was, it started back in, like, 91, 92. It was on PBS. And they, like, gave them the rights for free because the idea was not, like, we're going to make money off this game show. The idea was the entire country is going to want this game because they're going to watch this game show and go, oh, my gosh, what is this computer game? And then buy it, which worked. Like, everybody loved the computer game. So they gave it to PBS for free and were like, make a game show. And they spent a ton of time, like, interviewing. They interviewed, like, 800 or 900 children to figure out, like, what do you like in a TV show? Mm-hmm. What makes you excited? What do you want to see on TV? And the game show they came up with, Taylor, do you remember this game show?
I do. It was a good game show. It was fun to watch.
So it was more like you had your three contestants who love geography. And, like, you had to pass, like, a geography test to get on the show because they didn't want to embarrass you.
Right.
So you had to be somebody who, obviously, this was a special interest.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the show's hard.
Yeah.
It's a hard show. And, like, it came out at the same time that there were a bunch of, like, newspaper articles about, like, how Americans don't know geography, which could have existed at any point in time.
Including now. Yes.
Yeah. I was watching this documentary about, there was this headline where it was like 25% of Americans can't find the Pacific. And I was like, really?
Like, I believe it.
The ocean?
Like, the ocean?
The whole ocean. The whole one.
A quarter of us don't know where the Pacific Ocean is?
There aren't that many options.
There's only so many oceans. Anyway, so it came out and they had, like, the host and then the chief of the detective agency, and the host of the show was, like, he was one of the detectives who was, like, leading the three rookies who were the contestants in these activities. And there were all these film bits, like comedy bits between him and the chief. Rockapella was a central feature to this game show. They were an a cappella group.
That rocked.
But they rocked.
Uh-huh.
And their music was featured throughout the entire show. Like, not just the theme, but, like, they would sing a clue. One of the clues would be them singing it. They would sing details about a place. And then from those details, you had to know what place they were singing about.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would also do you remember what they would do during, like, the final, like, in order to find the warrant and the loot and the criminal, you had this big game of memory, basically, that you would play against the other contestant, and one of you would find all three first and win.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they would turn over one, they would either say, like, the warrant or the loot or something and sing it.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
But all in harmony.
Yep.
The warrant. Don't you remember that?
Yes.
It was great.
And then the final act was that giant map that you put, like,
yes,
person-sized pegs in that would light up or not light up. Like, you'd get asked, do you... geography questions and have to answer them by putting your post down in whatever part of the world the answer was in, right?
Yes, you're exactly right. The final thing, so once they whittled it down from 3 to 2 to one person, their final challenge was that they had a giant map of one continent. Like, they each one was a different continent.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief would tell you, like, Carmen is either in, and then rattle off really quickly, like, 12 different countries on that continent.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, if it was the United States, like, states.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would put you on this gigantic map with those siren things, and you would have to run, like, the host would yell out the name of a country, and then you would just have to run and put the siren on that country. It's like my nightmare, by the way.
That is also my nightmare.
I don't know. This sounds like, I feel like I would learn things better if there was some sort of, like, global guts element overlapping it. Because if you could, it's like Jeopardy plus guts. That's what the show was.
If you could correctly place 7, then you won.
Uh-huh.
That's hard.
I couldn't do that. I really couldn't.
It's very difficult. And do you know what the prize was, by the way?
What?
So if you won the whole show, like, as you go, there are prizes. Like, you would get, like, a detective kit with, like, mm-hmm. a National Geographic subscription and some sort of, like an atlas.
Glass.
You would get a world atlas and, yeah, stuff like that. Or, like, a bouncy ball that was the globe.
Yeah.
Things like that. But if you won the whole thing, you got to go anywhere in the contiguous United States. They would give you a trip anywhere. Eventually, it was expanded to North America. But
wow.
Originally, it was just, like, anywhere in the lower 48, you can go.
That's a pretty good deal.
And you got to write it down. Do you remember they would write it down?
Yes.
Where do you want to go? And then you would write it. And then at the end, they would only reveal it if you won.
I want to take some of these.
Kids would be like, Arizona!
I want to take some of these sound bites from this episode of you, like, saying, like, the loot, the warrant. I want to turn them into different sound, like, text tones for my phone. And, like, when I open up my maps, I just want it to be that clip of me saying, where do you want to go?
When I was watching old episodes of this, and when they first started, Rockapella started doing that, where do you want to go? It was so deep in my brain. I was like, oh my God, where have you been?
Where did you go?
You're in there still. I remember this. It was a great game show.
It sounds fun. It sounds like something I would have enjoyed. I would not have been well or done well on it, though.
I want to talk more about the legacy of Carmen Sandiego, but before we do that,
let's check the group message.
The first thing I want to tell you all about this week are my armpits.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
They smell great.
I haven't taken a whiff, but I believe you.
I promise you they do. And that's thanks to Native deodorant. They are all about stopping the stink. So mm-hmm. I won't be stinky. This is every morning, by the way, when I need to go take a shower and Cooper doesn't want me to leave. She'll smell me and tell me I smell fine and I don't need a shower. But that's because of my Native deodorant. I smell so good. My kids don't ever want me to shower. You've probably heard about Native's deodorant before from us, but have you tried their body wash?
No.
Have you tried their toothpaste?
No.
Have you tried their sunscreen?
No.
No, that's right. And all of those are available now for you to try. If you already love that deodorant, if you already love that feeling of knowing what's in your deodorant and how good it smells and how good you feel, they now have a broad spectrum SPF 30 sunscreen for your face and body that you can try. They've got unscented, which is great. If you're like me and you can be sensitive to a lot of different scents and fragrances, having that like fresh, clean, unscented option is so great. They've also got coconut and pineapple if you want something a little fruity.
Summery.
For the summer. It's lightweight, it absorbs quickly, and sunscreen is so important. I wear sunscreen, especially on my face, every single day. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to protect your skin from those rays. So check out Native Sunscreen today. And Taylor, if our listeners want to do that, what should they do?
Well, if you want to stay fresh and stay clean with Native, you can go to nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout for 20% off your first order.
So whether it's for work or for play or for pleasure, for business, a lot of us are going to be on the move again this summer. We're finally maybe able to do some more things than perhaps we were last summer.
Sure.
I know for me that means finally getting to do summer theater again, which means I'm spending lots of time going to and from the theater, spending lots of time hanging out backstage, hanging out during rehearsals, lots of songs to memorize, lots of things to go over, cramming in workouts in between, stuff like that. So it's been essential for me so far getting into the beginning of the summer to take my Raycons with me. With my Raycon earbuds, I get crisp, powerful beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. And they look and feel great. They have little customizable gel tips to fit in your ear so that they don't fall out, which is great for me, especially when I'm working out, you know, on the treadmill, going for a run, don't have to worry about them falling out and having to stop to pick them up. And they come in a range of cool colors. So you can match them with your workout fits. You can match them with your vibe for the day. And also, they're not going to fall out. So lots of comfortable fit with also customizable looks. And they're built to go wherever you go. They have quick and seamless Bluetooth pairing and a little compact charging case that makes it so your Raycons have a 24-hour battery life. And they're super portable because of that charging case. So you don't have to worry about carrying a cord with you, any sorts of wires. I take the case with me in my bag whenever I'm going to work out, whenever I'm going to a rehearsal and I want to listen to songs, work on my parts, my harmonies, my lines, all that kind of stuff. So they're an absolute must-have for me in all parts of my life, my function, you know, all sorts of stuff. Serve every need. And they last for a long time. So, Tay, if our listeners want to check out Raycon, what should they do?
Well, Raycon's offering 15% off all their products for our listeners. And here's what you got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/buffering. There you'll get 15% off your entire Raycon order. And it's such a good deal, you'll want to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/buffering. One more time, that's buyraycon.com/buffering.
So this game show was incredibly popular, by the way. Mm-hmm. It should be known.
I believe it.
Yes. A lot of kids wanted to get on it. not me. It was one of those, you know, it's funny. There
you
were
didn't?
So many. Oh, no, no. Geography. I knew geography was not my strong suit.
That's fair. And it's also not mine.
Again, you hand me a giant blank map of the world and tell me to start naming all the countries. It really is like. It's like spatial recognition, like spatial reasoning skills, and then just that rote memorization. That's not where my strength lies. But man, some of the kids on that show would kick butt.
That's still the hardest thing I think I've done all the time being in college. I had a class for my political science introductory, like 100 level class, that every few weeks we had a map quiz where he would just give us like a continent and all the countries were blank. And we had to fill in all the countries and rivers and bodies of water. And I, so hard. I don't still remember any of them now, but I would have been good at that game show, like for that brief period of that semester during that class.
They would also like, the last question to get from the 3-2 person round, you could wager like how many crime bucks. That's what your points were called.
Crime bucks.
Crime bucks. and you could wager crime bucks, and they would show you, like, it's on this part of the world. So wager based on how much you know about this part of the world.
So like a Final Jeopardy.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, like, well, I don't know anything about any parts of the world. unless it's, like, Huntington.
Was it ever Huntington?
No.
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 No, it's not Huntington. No. One time they got it wrong. Like,
only one?
The show screwed up.
Oh. How'd they do that?
They had to invite a contestant back to play again because they cheated him out of the chance to win.
Wow.
Yeah. Part of it is because I thought this was really interesting. They don't. Why would they not, like, make these shows readily available for people to check out now? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, they're hard to find episodes of this.
Yes.
Part of it is because a lot of it's wrong now.
Yeah.
Really?
That's what, like, a lot of the songs in the intro, right, are kind of like they're incorrect, or the places.
Yeah. Places change. I thought this was so such an interesting commentary on the way we think about, like, geography seems like the kind of thing that is immutable. Like, it's just it places are where they are, and that doesn't change. And it has changed so much over the years. I mean, you think about, like, this show started right at the collapse of the Soviet Union. Like, they would sometimes have to change maps from day to day.
Wow.
Literally from day to day to keep up with. And they would have to start putting disclaimers on the show. Like, at the time this was filmed, this was all accurate.
Wow.
But by the time they may have aired it, it was no longer true. Because whole countries were coming into existence.
I mean, Istanbul was Constantinople. That you can't go back to Constantinople.
I mean, even old New York was once New Amsterdam.
Why they changed it, I can't say.
I can't say.
Maybe they just liked it better that way. I don't know.
See, there's so much change, but it's interesting because they would have to constantly readjust to that, which would be really hard for the contestants too.
Yeah,
you know,
how do you even study?
It was people really liked it because they thought it was an educational show. It made geography exciting, which I don't think anyone had ever done.
Has anyone done it since?
I mean, I again, as somebody who, like, geography was always a weak point for me, loved Carmen Sandiego. I mean, watched it obsessively. I couldn't get enough of it. I thought it was so engaging, the way that they would, like, show you the different places and kind of, like, not just teach you where things are. I mean, that was the thing about Carmen Sandiego. Like, it wasn't just where this place is. They would teach you some things about, like, geographical features, mountains, rivers, lakes, oceans, things like that. But also, like, cultural things, like ancient culture connections, language, famous people that were from there, like artists or writers or activists or whatever. Like, you would learn other things about these locations, not just that's where they are. Monetary units, things like that. I mean, all kinds of things that I thought were really cool to know and learn, that were a little easier for me to remember than just, like, where everything is.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought was, you know, comparing the two cartoon shows, the old cartoon show, like, they throw a lot of, like, facts at you that are really, like, good cultural things to know. They use a lot of foreign language in the old cartoon. Like, your two main characters, one's, like, a martial artist, but the other one, like, the boy, like, speaks, I don't know, like, 20 languages and uses a lot of them. And, like, they talk about proper ways of, like, greeting people in other cultures. Well, that's the new cartoon. It's kind of a bummer by comparison because they focus a lot more on just making a cool adventure story, but it's got a lot less of those, like, rapid fire cultural touch points and, like, little bits of history. And I thought that was a really great way to learn that stuff. Like, I remembered things from the episodes I watched. Like, oh, yeah, that is how I knew that as a kid.
I think that's really true. I think that whether the computer game or the game show or the cartoons, which I know there was even a really recent one from, like, 2019 to 2021 on Netflix.
That's the one I'm talking, the recent one that I don't think is as educational.
That's the one I watched.
Okay. Yeah,
I watched most, I mean, not most of the show, but most of what I watched and consumed of Carmen Sandiego was that show because it was on Netflix. But yeah, it did not have a lot of the educational stuff. It was much more story based. I mean, they gave Carmen, like, a big backstory. She's not a bad guy anymore. She's like Robin Hood, basically.
Yeah.
Taking money from and funds from Vile that they've stolen and giving it to good charitable causes.
I think there was always an inclination to want, like Taylor, like you've said, to want to do that with Carmen Sandiego. Mm-hmm. Make it so that, I don't know. Like I said, I didn't finish that newer video game, but I feel like it was taking me in a direction where, because Jules kept saying, I don't know why Carmen would do this. This isn't like her.
Because they know each other so well from their lengthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, she's like, I remember when Carmen and I rode a train up to Fujiyama. It's like, oh, do you?
Oh, do you?
Well, see, I feel like the new cartoon is it's also a bummer to me because of what they did with the Zach and Ivy characters. It's like, as I mentioned in the old one, like Zach was cool, he knew a bunch of languages, and like Ivy was like a martial artist. She was also just like a really awesome, like, beautiful redhead in the era of like 90s animated beautiful redheads. You had like April O'Neil, mm-hmm. and you had like mm-hmm. Jesse Bannon from yeah. Johnny Quest. Like, I don't know, they all kind of, they had the exact same character design, but I liked them all. And then in the reboot, I don't understand, they just made them like Bostonians, like aggressively from Boston. That's their entire character design. They don't seem to have any particularly useful skills. All of the cool like language and history, no, they're just deeply from Boston and they wear like jerseys and that's who they are.
That's interesting, because in the video game that I was playing, the one character, Jules, is like, I mean, she's like a competent detective who's trying to figure this out and obviously has this emotional intelligence because she's trying to figure out, like, why would Carmen do this? And so, like, you, like, in the little snippets, you get, this is a complicated person. The guy, whose name I can't even remember, the guy is like, his thing is he wears the vest that has all the stuff in it that you'll use in the video game. So that's like number one thing you know about him is he wears the vest.
The big vest.
The big vest, like the Acme vest that has like the clue finder or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The translator, all the stuff in it. And then number two, he says things like, they're looking at a menu and she's like, oh, miso soup, I love that. And he's like, well, what about a hamburger? Aren't they healthy? And it's like, what? What was this what? Guy? What's this character? I don't like this.
I didn't know how to feel about something made in the 90s having more cultural sensitivity than something that is so recent.
Like, yeah.
That was the thing, like Carmen Sandiego for me was that perfect. And I think maybe I was not like an Oregon Trail kid. I don't know why.
Seems like it would have been your jam.
Well, and I feel like it just wasn't, maybe I wasn't in the right classrooms or something. I knew there were classes where kids got to play Oregon Trail, but I wasn't one of the kids who got to play Oregon Trail. I was always really jealous, mm-hmm. but like I got to do Carmen Sandiego. That and Jeopardy on the Commodore 64 were where I learned most of what I know today.
Well, maybe this is like a generational thing, because I definitely played a lot more Oregon Trail than Carmen Sandiego or Jeopardy.
That's really interesting. I wonder if it is, because I played that game over and over. I played it all. Like, I had it by the end. I didn't have to use the Encyclopedia Britannica because
you knew it all.
I already knew it. Yeah. I'd memorized it because I'd played it so many times. Yeah. Same with Jeopardy. They only had so many questions.
I mean,
the only game I couldn't master was Prince of Persia.
Yeah. Well, there was that one jump.
Because I couldn't figure out. Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to jump.
You know, I mean, you probably learned a lot more useful information from Carmen Sandiego. I think all I learned from Oregon Trail was to be terrified of dysentery at the age of 10.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't want to get dysentery, so I don't think that's like a...
I mean, I don't know how like practical that fear is for for me at the time, but...
Cholera's no good either.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I was of a classroom generation where we played a lot of Jeopardy, but it was like they had like websites or like ways to make PowerPoints that were Jeopardy games. It's so like teachers made their own Jeopardy games based on the subject and like what you had learned in the test you had coming up. And that was always a big day, which then of course turned into Kahoot, which is the phone app. And also like Jackbox, where you go to a website on your phone.
I know what you're talking about.
Except educational. They ask you questions up on the screen. Your teachers make the Kahoots and then you answer them from your phone. So, I mean, I guess educational in the sense that like you were reviewing stuff you learned in the class, but it was not actually a game per se. It was more so just like an interactive study tool, not necessarily a game, but I did get very competitive.
I think that, I don't know, in my day it got a little loose with what qualified as an educational game, because I'm remembering now playing, Sydney, do you remember Lemmings?
Yes.
It was a computer game where you had like this little crew of little lemmings, these little characters that you had to solve a puzzle to stop them from like throwing themselves off a cliff, basically. And like you'd have to, somewhere like math puzzles and like different, to make different things go up and down on the landscape. Uh-huh. And I would play like hours of Lemmings at school. And I don't know what I was really learning from that, but I really enjoyed it.
It was problem solving, but yeah, that was the whole thing, is lemmings are going to throw themselves off the cliff, so you have to stop them.
Wow.
Yeah, but that, I mean, and the Jeopardy game was just like, it was Jeopardy, but it was it was a very old computer game, so like, you'd put in your answer, and then you'd sit and wait for Alex Trebek to be like, that is correct, or whatever. Now, the answer is, and then you'd wait and wait and wait, and then it would show up on the screen.
Yeah. There was a website we often visited when we had computer time in the library when I was in elementary school, called Cool Math Games.
Ooh.
Was the website, and uh-huh. You're supposed to play it because it had math games that were educational.
And they were cool.
They were cool. But what teachers didn't know was they also had all of these games on this website that were like the various like Papa's Pizzeria, Papa's Ice Cream Area or Ice Creamery or whatever, where it was just like you just play a game, Ice Creamery, where it's just like people coming in and placing orders, and you just have to like make the ice cream they want and like do it in fast enough time. Or like there was one for hot dogs and tacos and pizza and like all the iterations of various food service restaurants. So we all would just play those, which we learned nothing, but it was on Cool Math Games, so it was fine.
Wait, I remember a pizza game like that. That's what you literally did. You just made pizza. You just clicked on the toppings and you made a pizza.
Yeah, you just took orders and it would tell you like what kind of crust and sauce and things, and you'd have to do it fast enough. It'd take you through a little conveyor belt to place all the toppings, then you'd have to serve them, but do it like fast enough so the other customers didn't get angry and got a good tip.
See, I didn't get to do it. My interaction with computers in school, my computer class was learning to type, and then Excel spreadsheets.
Never got that. I learned to type, but not Excel spreadsheets.
Did a ton of time on Excel spreadsheets, and I learned to type. Wow. And then I did play Carmen Sandiego mainly at home for fun.
Mm-hmm. Nerd.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was fun. I think that there's like a shortage of that, like that appreciation for, especially those early games, mm-hmm. which, I mean, there was a ton of time put into that game and into the game shows and all the iterations of it to make it engaging to children, so that they would learn without realizing they were learning.
Mm-hmm.
And like that skill is so valuable. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it wasn't, there was no part of me that would have ever said like, well, I don't want to play like the Cool Math Games. I don't want to play the Carmen Sandiego because I'd rather do this pizza game. I loved Carmen Sandiego.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on to do like Carmen Sandiego, where in the USA, to target it more to just US geography. They did a Where in Time,
mm-hmm.
and you had to go through different eras. And they did a game show of that too.
Wow.
Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. They got rid of Rockapella and replaced him with a different band, but
that's sad.
But they did that for a little while. There were like all these different spinoff game, like video games. One was even like Where in North Dakota.
Oh no.
So I guess if you really want to crack down on your North Dakota geography,
probably if you're from North Dakota, yeah. Right?
I would assume.
Cause like we had to learn all about West Virginia. Did they have a Where in the World or Where in the West Virginia is Carmen Sandiego?
Not that I know of.
Is she with Mothman? Is she at Hillbilly Hot Dogs?
Is she at Blackwater Falls? Is she at the Greenbrier Resort?
I like that she is at Hillbilly Hot Dogs with Mothman. There we go.
Yes.
The warrant.
Okay.
Well, it reminded me of the Clue thing. Anyway. But it the legacy of Carmen Sandiego has lived on, whether through multiple different iterations of the video game for different like levels and different cartoon series. I think there have been some like film attempts, and there's books you can buy. I think comic books even. I don't know. There are all kinds of different Carmen Sandiego.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Teen Titans Go, there was a tribute episode called Where in the World is
Wow.
Carl San Pedro?
Wow.
And they had to travel all over the world to find
just the same thing.
Carl San Pedro.
Yeah.
But it was very funny. It was very good. I would recommend it. They did an Oregon Trail one too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You love Teen Titans Go.
I do love Teen Titans Go. They have not done a Prince of Persia one. I'm hoping they will so that I can figure out how to jump.
Still? You want to figure out how to
Every time my little guy would just, he'd be walking towards that pit and I would hit a different key and he'd fall right into it. And then I'd have to start over from the beginning and we'd get to that pit again and I would hit a different key and he still wouldn't jump. To this day, I don't know how to jump.
I don't know.
Someone listening to this show will know.
I think he needed a controller or something for that game. I don't know. Because I feel like we tried every key on the keyboard to make that character jump. Like that. Was
Justin not know?
I don't think Justin had a Commodore 64. I don't know why we did.
Why did you?
Why were we like early adopters of computers? I mean, think about our parents. They're not like on the tech train, but like we had that computer before most people had computers. Did Uncle Rick give it to us?
I think we got it from a family member gave it to us, like you and me, because mom and dad were like, well, that's there. There you go.
Yeah, I think you're right, because he was a computer teacher at the time, and he was really into computing and computers and had...
That makes sense.
And he would, like, update and get new ones. So I think he gave us his, like, Commodore 64 when he was done with it. And, like, I got a better computer here. You guys can have this one if you want to play games on it or whatever. And we were like, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. So we had a lot of, boot disks that I did not know what to do with. Floppy disks. Just, like, but I knew DOS, and I knew the three computer games that we understood how to play.
Like, I tried so hard to play Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I kept getting crushed in my house at the beginning every time, and like I could never make it out of my house, and I'm to this day I still don't know, like, can you get out of the house? It gets bulldozed, but like, is there a way to get out of there before it gets bulldozed? I don't know. I never figured it out.
It's really weird to think like those like early days of interacting with a computer where like you'd look at the keyboard and think like, I definitely shouldn't touch some of these buttons ever. Like, is that fear of like, I could explode. Who knows? Like, they're just the ones with the funny symbols. Don't touch them. Don't ever touch them.
I felt that way too. Or like, I don't know what I might DEL with this, but I shouldn't DEL that. I think, I don't know. Be careful there.
I really don't.
What am I controlling with? What is the function? I don't know.
A great fear of what could go wrong, which I don't know, maybe was well founded because computers were not as user friendly then, but
Well, thank you all. I have loved revisiting Carmen Sandiego. I'm gonna make my children watch it now.
Make them get really into geography.
They really should. It is still a problem. I mean, as much as Carmen Sandiego fixed it for some kids, once it went away, everybody forgot geography again. I don't know. Maybe a quarter of Americans still can't find the Pacific Ocean.
I would believe
that. I think the number might have gone up, frankly.
Yeah.
Teach your kids geography, everybody.
It's good to know where places are.
Don't end up like me. I don't know where anything is.
Taylor, what's next?
Next, I want to talk about the, I'd say it's a cult LGBTQ comedy, But I'm a Cheerleader. Came out in the year 2000.
Awesome. You know,
I also came out in the year 2000.
Hey, that's true.
As old as this movie.
I am.
Do you have a cult LGBTQ following?
Yes.
We maybe.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I've never seen it, so I'm excited. I know of it, but I've never seen it, so.
Wow. Yeah.
It's
very
All right. Fun there fact. Are a lot of TikToks with it.
Really?
Are there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get surfaced those a lot. I don't know what my algorithm is. Right now, it's mostly clips.
Very weird.
It's mostly clips from Boy Meets World. So,
Wow. Mine's guinea pigs.
Well, thank you both. This has been a lot of fun. I would really encourage you at least to go listen to the music of Rockapella from Carmen Sandiego.
I mean, Sydney has perfectly emulated it here for you.
Where do you want to go? Anyway. Thank you to Maximum Fun. Thank you again to everybody who donated in the drive. Thank you. We really couldn't do this without you, and we so appreciate your support. You should go to MaximumFun.org. There are a lot of great shows that you would enjoy. You can tweet at us at StillBuff, and you can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org if you have thoughts or suggestions or questions. Or don't ask us geography ones. We won't know them.
No.
Ask Carmen Sandiego. And thank you to the Novellas for a theme song, Baby Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am still buffering.
And I
too.
Wow, I can't do it. Thought you were waiting for someone to help you out there.
I was waiting for an assist and nobody gave it to me.
The 2021 pin sale has begun. Thank you so much to everyone who participated in the Max Fund Drive. This is the last year for a while that we'll be doing pins for Max Fund Drive, and the fifth year that we'll be selling pins and donating all proceeds to charity. The past year proved what we already knew, that having access to the internet at home is a necessity for work, school, healthcare, and keeping in touch with family and friends. So the proceeds from this year's pin sale will go towards Everyone On, a nonprofit working to bridge the digital divide. We're grateful that with your support, we'll be able to help low-income folks gain access to affordable computers, internet services, and digital literacy programs. The sale will run until May 28th. Folks at the $10 monthly level and above will have access to all of the pins from the drive. That's 38 pins, one from every show on the network. We also have a special 2021 Max Fund Drive pin that all members can purchase. Go to MaximumFun.org/pinsale for more info. And to learn more about Everyone On and support them directly, you can go to EveryoneOn.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.